And welcome to another edition of the TDN Writers Room. My name is Bill Findlay. I'm a correspondent for the Thoroughbred Daily News. I also work for SiriusXM Radio, doing the Down the Stretch radio show.
I'm Randy Moss with NBC Sports, catching up on my sleep after Derby week and already starting to prepare for the Preakness.
Terrific show, Randy. Well done.
Very much, yes.
Really enjoyed
thank
it.
You very much.
Really, really good show. Lovely features. Loved the one on Larry Demerit and Wayne Lucas as well. So really, really good. I'm Zoe Cadman with First Racing, and we're here to talk about the Derby.
And of course, Mystic Dan is the Derby winner. And what did our team think of him before the race? Well, we can't do any lies or throw you any BS because our intrepid producers have it on tape. Number three is Mystic Dan at 20-1 in the morning line. My take on him, he ran a 101 buyer when he won the Southwest Stakes. If he can run that again, he's a contender. He's one of those long shots that I think, might make his name, you might hear his name coming down the stretch.
To me, the real Mystic Dan is somewhere in between what you saw in the Southwest and what you saw in the Arkansas Derby, which to me is not good enough.
I'm in agreement with Randy there. I mean, a good thing in his favor is that he broke his maiden by 7.5 at Churchill Downs. So he's going to handle the trip. Is he good enough? I don't think so.
Wow. Well, how about well, that? Family. I get the gold medal for the week. Thank you.
You thumbs up.
Yes. Did I bet on him? Of course not. But anyways, but what a fantastic horse race with the three horses on the wire. The story of Ken McPeak winning both the Kentucky Oaks and the Kentucky Derby. It was a great day for horse racing and you had so many good stories. Everyone got around the track safely. But Randy, I'll start with you. I think Kenny McPeak, if people didn't know who he was before, I think they sure know now. That was a Hall of Fame performance and a feat by him. And I think it will be his ticket into the Hall of Fame.
Oh, yeah. I think I would agree with you. I mean, we're going to talk about him as he's our Green Group Guest of the Week. But there's been no trainer that has consistently done what he has done with the budget that he has had to work with. Right. I mean, he's bought bargain horses from day one. And yet he's won now the Kentucky Derby and the Preakness and the Belmont and many other major stakes races. All week long, he was extremely confident about both the Oaks and the Kentucky Derby. And, a lot of guys are confident and it doesn't pan out. But his confidence was certainly justified, as it turns out. Good job by McPeak.
You better bring a bear because I've got a grizzly.
Yes.
His exact comments about Torpedo Anna. So, I mean, we all know that Kenny's never come into a race thinking he can't win it. I mean, he is the most glass full person that you're ever going to want to meet. And it works. I mean, you have to have confidence in your ability. Confidence in your horses. You can't be going in thinking you've got the second, third best horse. You've got to go in swinging for the fences. And we've seen time and time again. Yeah, he puts big races on his calendar and he's not scared of anyone. So kudos to Kenny. Kudos to Brian Hernandez. A terrific ride. Did the best horse win on the day, guys?
Zoe, I'm glad you brought that up because the best horse didn't win the race. And even though I'm the guy that gave kudos to Mystic Dan beforehand and deserve a pat on the back, I will say that he wasn't the best horse, which is no knock on him. But he saved ground under a beautiful ride from Brian Hernandez and literally two jumps out of the gate. He had him glued to the rail and never got off the rail at any point in the race. So, and then the nose finish with Sierra Leone and the Japanese horse, two noses apart. They both, not only did they both go really wide, but you also had the bumping incident in the stretch that cost the Japanese horse. Matter of fact, I think you could make a case that if you run this race 10 times, Mystic Dan might win it three and might not have won it ever if not for what was just a perfect ride from Brian Hernandez.
Yeah, I mean, the genesis for this, apparently, Brian Hernandez has been around a while. He's been riding for 20 years or whatever at Churchill Downs. And in the Churchill Downs jockey's room, his locker was in the same corner as Calvin Burrell. And so he saw Calvin Burrell firsthand with his rail skimming rides, right, on Street Sense and Mind That Bird and, you know, I mean, Super Saver and Always Dreaming. And that sort of hatched the strategy when Mystic Dan drew an inside post position. He's a long shot. What have I got to lose? I'm going to try to give it the Calvin Burrell treatment. And the shot that they had on NBC, and we'll resurrect it, I'm sure, at the Preakness, of him getting through inside Track Phantom, coming to the quarter pole, is just amazing, right? It was Calvin Burrell all over again, because there was very, very little room there. And he actually bounced off Track Phantom a little bit and maybe bounced off the rail a little bit. But it's the age-old argument when you're trying to decide who the best horse is, right? Because a lot of horses get that trip or have the opportunity like that, and they're not good enough to take advantage mm-hmm. of it. They're not good enough to capitalize on it. And you can say, okay, well, yeah, it was the rail trip, and you know, the other horses were wide. But it's also the tactical nature of Mystic Dan to be able to be close to the pace, right? And be able to tuck inside and run inside horses just fine and put himself in a position where he can capitalize on that kind of trip. Whereas Sierra Leone, right? He's at the back of the pack and he's lugging in through the stretch like he always does, making mistakes. And Forever Young hops at the start, breaks in the air, making a mistake. And Mystic Dan made no mistake whatsoever and was good enough to capitalize on that trip. If all three horses got the same trip, would Mystic Dan have won? No, obviously not. But, you know, he also deserves a whole heck of a lot of credit for all the reasons I just mentioned.
Well, let's throw this now to our former jockey, Zoe Cabin. Zoe, I want to get your take on Brian Hernandez and what he made look easy. I bet really isn't that easy to do. How about Hernandez? Do you ever ride against him? Was he around when you were riding?
Yeah.
Okay. So tell us more about him and really what a special ride that was.
I mean, he's about as level-headed as you're going to find. He doesn't have a fiery temper. You know, you've seen some of these Cajun jocks with fiery tempers. Maybe they hit the bottle or something like that. Brian is just about as level as you can get. And he's just quietly plied his trade over the years. I mean, a lot of people forgot he was a Clipse Award winning jockey. He was champion apprentice in 2004, I think.
Yep, and 2004.
Then his business just slid off. In 2006, you couldn't find him with a search warrant. I remember him coming out and winning the Breeders' Cup Classic on Fort Land in, 2014 or something like that. But, I mean, he had a good few lean years, but he just kept plugging away, hooked up with McPeak, and things just started to go right. I mean, is this going to change his life? He's planning on maybe going to Saratoga this summer, and he's hoping this is going to build up some momentum to get some better rides and get on some better horses. I would have no problem riding Brian Hernandez. As far as his ride, I mean, it takes a lot of balls just to stay on the fence in the world's biggest race and just hope something opens up, because you're either a genius or you're just a dumbass because you got stopped. And that takes balls just to sit in the pocket and not swing out like everyone does, because when they turned for home, we saw what Sierra Leone and the Japanese horse,
Forever Young.
Forever Young did turning for home. They're 15 wide turning for home. And that probably cost the pair of them the win. So, yeah, it was a stellar race from him. As far as Sierra Leone is concerned, yeah, he lugs in. He's got a problem. I'm actually a bit surprised that there wasn't some more equipment on him. He just had a plain old snaffle. He lugged in the bluegrass. I mean, give Tyler Gaffione a bit of power steering. You know it's going to happen. He's a big horse. He runs with his head on the ground. I wouldn't want to ride him. Did you see the picture? How low his head was on the ground coming down to the wire? I mean, that's really hard to ride. And you know, the only thing harder to ride than a horse that's lugging out is a horse that's lugging in. Mm-hmm. That is impossible. At least when a horse is lugging out, you have some forward momentum. You can hit them right-handed. You can try and keep them straight. When a horse is lugging in, you've just got to hold on to your rein. It is almost impossible to ride one forward. So that squarely cost him, because he was having to lean back, grab a hold of that right rein. There wasn't any room to hit him left-handed. And that's impossible to ride. Now, we'll get to the stewards in just a moment. But I mean, there's plenty of pictures. His whip touched the other horse. I mean, that can't be allowed. Can't be allowed. There's an actual picture of the whip on the other horse. It's in today's TDN. It's definitely touching the other horse forever.
Yeah. And Randy, the mistake was not necessarily that they didn't take him down. The mistake was that there was no inquiry with Sierra Leone and Forever Young. Matthew, going back, we were talking about who was best. I would actually make a case that Forever Young was best, because both he and Sierra Leone had almost identical trips in the amount of ground they lost on the far turn. And Forever Young, on top of that, had Sierra Leone leaning all over him and bumping him throughout the stretch. But I don't think the Churchill stewards did themselves any favors by not posting an inquiry. And you can't rely on the jockey to do that. He's a guy from Japan. He doesn't know what's going on. He's not aware of the customs of what we do in American racing. I think they even read somewhere that they said it's very rare for a jockey to lodge an objection in Japan. Say, no, they think it's the steward's job. So, yeah, not the steward's finest moment.
No, there's a lot of things I want to say here, and I'll be as quick as I can. I mean, I want to be fair, first of all. I mean, as far as Churchill Downs and the job they did for the 150th Derby, okay? Yes, you can make the case that all the best horses weren't at the Derby because of Muth and Imagination being excluded. But beyond that, the paddock was sensational. I mean, the horse safety aspect of it, they resurfaced the racetrack, everything. I mean, Churchill did a fine job, very fine job on the 150th Derby. In the end, this part of it, their stewards let them down. Big time. Big time. The fact that there was no inquiry, you know, either the stewards are 100% incompetent, or this is a calculated move. And I think it's the latter. I think that what we saw from Maximum Security and what we see here, the failure to put up the inquiry sign, is by design to avoid controversy as much as possible, right? Right now, this has been called a mini controversy. And the reason it's a mini controversy doesn't involve the winner, but also if they put the inquiry sign up, then all of America knows, oh, something happened in the race. Oh, they're looking at it. And make no mistake, I don't care what they say, they looked at this thing over and over and over, because it took a long time for them to declare this race official. There's no doubt that that's what they were doing, okay? And in the end, this was an elementary school disqualification. You don't get any more obvious than this. They bump four, five, six times, and I don't care. I mean, the take that it was give and take between the two horses is absolutely ludicrous, because all Sakai was trying to do on Forever Young, he didn't veer out into Sierra Leone. He was just trying to hold his position as Sierra Leone kept pushing him and kept bumping him down from the eight path all the way down into the three path. The reason why Sakai didn't claim foul, we find out the next day, even in Japan, jockeys very seldom claim foul. With the politeness of the Japanese society and coming to the United States and feeling like they're guests at Churchill Downs, he's not going to rock the boat that much. They said the next morning in Japan, it's the stewards that typically do all this, with stewards' inquiries and then disqualifying, and they don't rely on the jockeys, okay? They just dropped the ball in so many different ways here. It doesn't impact the winner, obviously. It impacts the gamblers and the owners as much as anything else. But Forever Young should have been second, and Sierra Leone should have been third. One more thing I want to say about the race before we leave it. One of the big question marks going into the race was Forever Young and the travel from Japan to Saudi Arabia, Saudi Arabia to Dubai, Dubai to the United States, how much that would take out of him. I think we got the answer to that, that it can be done. Yeah, he very well, Bill, I agree. You may be correct. He may have been the best horse in the race. The best four horses in the race. I've gone back and studied the replays over and over and over, right? In no particular order. Sierra Leone, Forever Young, Mystic Dan, and T.O. Password, the other Japanese horse, who broke slowly, got bothered on the first turn, going into the first turn, just like Forever Young did. He's 18th when most people expected him to be right up on the pace. He was the widest horse of all around the turn. He was even wider than Sierra Leone and Forever Young by about a half a path or a path. And yet he's a length and three quarters behind Catching Freedom and finishes fifth while Catching Freedom had a rail run up the inside. Those were the best horses in the race, and two of them were from Japan. So that's something to keep in mind when we look at this next year.
Yeah, it's a scary, scary thought, the Japanese and how well their horses are running over here. My two cents on the stewards at Churchill Downs, for the love of God, what were they thinking? Did they not learn anything from Maximum Security? Just post a damn inquiry sign. I mean, it should automatically be post every single year, the amount of bumping, jostling, taking up, clipping heels, everything that goes on in that race. They should just hang the damn sign when the horses leave the gate. Just take a look at it. I mean, for the love of God, I'm watching it and I'm like, what the hell are they thinking? It just blew my mind. And I feel for Tyler Gaffione trying to ride that giant monster, right, lugging in like that. I really feel for him because he truly believes that he probably could have won the race. I am not buying for one second that he lost his balance when he reached over and pushed the other horse. Because if you look at him, he's leaning off to the right. So if he lost his balance, he would be leaning to the left. He's just got his, I'm not buying that. That's just BS. He's just trying to make himself some room. But I do feel for him that was a really, really tough horse to ride. I hope Chad Brown puts some better power steering equipment on him next time. Or just stay on the rail. If a horse lugs in, you want the rail because that'll keep him straight. So, yeah, maybe he'll get a rail run. But that's my two pennies. Oh, and T.O. Password, the rider dropped the whip as well. Kazushi Kimura.
No, did he really?
He saw a whip flying, yeah, about the eighth pole. So that didn't help. One other thing.
I missed that one.
How good is Pratt at riding the Derby? Now, he's won it once by default, but if you look back the last few years, like, he's always in the top four. Angel of Empire, Zandon, Hot Rod Charlie, this year as well. Like, he would be my Derby rider going forward.
Yeah, and he followed Mystic Dan right up yeah, through the inside. Yeah.
All right, guys, before we move on to other subjects, first of all, congratulations to NBC and Randy and his team. Largest TV audience for a Kentucky Derby since 1989. It's so strange that horse racing has its problems and is declining. And at the same time, the Kentucky Derby has never in its history been more popular. And Randy, damn, you were cute with those three-year-olds, weren't you?
That's my demographic, Bill. Like I said, kids and dogs. I used to say kids, dogs, and old people, but now that I'm starting to creep up a little bit toward the old person stage, then I have to drop that from my comment.
Okay.
But it's the best TV show I've ever been involved with.
Well, it was terrific.
And it really
I'm not just saying that because you're on right now. It was really, really good.
So. Well, and it had very little to do with me, what I'm talking about, because you had the element of, you know, the NBC production and directing and all that they bring to the table. You had fantastic storylines. You had the history part of it, right? 150th and all the history stories that NBC told. You had the beautiful paddock and two different sets that we had. You had Mike Tirico, who's unbelievable. And then, oh, yeah, the closest finish in the history of the Kentucky Derby. So it all added up.
All right, guys. So one last thing. We should have got the tape back from last week about what everybody had to say about Fierceness. I believe Randy, you picked him, and Zoe, I think you picked him too. I did not. But, you know, what a perplexing horse this is. He did it again, and he didn't have anything. I mean, was it the greatest trip ever? No, but it wasn't like he had a bad trip or he didn't get bumped coming out of the gate, at least than anything that I saw. This horse just is a nutcase. I mean, some days he runs like the Seattle Slough, and other days he runs like a four claimer from Beulah Park. Among a good horse, I can't recall seeing anybody this inconsistent in my life. And you know what he's going to do? He's going to win the Belmont by 15 lengths. You watch. He's going to get out front, gallop along all by himself. The half's going to go in 50, and he's going to draw off just like he did in the Florida Derby. And then we'll all be saying again, oh, what a great horse. But not right now. He really, I'll put it mildly, he stunk up the joint.
I'm not going to say he's a nutcase. Yeah, he was close to Fast Pace, but the winner was right there as well. So honestly, after we'd done our podcast, I watched some of his gallops leading up to the race. I didn't like him at all. At all. I liked his work, but I did not like his gallops leading up to the race. So like I did a superfecta. I still thought he'd hang in there, but I put him in fourth. So yeah, I don't know if we'll even see him in the Belmont.
And when we made our picks, okay, we had a caveat. We're making them early. They're subject to change. And on the air, I called an audible, and I picked Sierra Leone instead of
I noticed Christmas that,
because
yes.
I was concerned kind of about the same things. But, yeah, it's a head-scratcher, definitely.
The TDN Writers' Room is brought to you by Keeneland. This year's Keeneland September Yearling Sale begins on September the 9th. I will write that down because I will be there. And if you're wondering why you should make plans to attend, look no further than this past weekend at Churchill Downs. Listen to this. Vava, winner of the Grade 1 Derby City Distaff, is a $280,000 September yearling. Tricari, winner of the Grade 1 American Turf, was a Keeneland January weanling. Cogburn, winner of the Grade 2 Twin Spires Turf Sprint, was a Keeneland November weanling. And while Kentucky Derby winner Mystic Dam was a homebred, his dam, Mam, was a 2014 Keeneland September grad. Enough said. We'll be right back after this message from Keeneland.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. On behalf of the management and staff of Keeneland, I would like to welcome you to the September Yearling Sale. Good to have you back with us.
The energy at Keeneland Book One is unlike any other sale that you'll go to.
It is the marketplace.
The center of the horse universe.
It's electric. You can't replicate the urgency that's at Keeneland September.
Quality in quantity.
Keeneland September Book One, every breeder's dream.
Phenomenal talent, brilliance, had that high speed that he could carry.
Jack Christopher to win the champagne.
He carried his quality from 2 to 3. He was top notch.
Oh, Woody himself would appreciate this effort.
He was the most brilliant horse all year. That's all I heard was Jack Christopher. He was obviously the one to beat.
It is Jack Christopher.
He showed a lot of brilliance and speed and ability on the track. So we hope that carries through to these foals. Our foal is the first foal out of a mare. She's got a lot of scope, a lot of quality to her, very athletic. We're really excited about what we're seeing.
Lots of Jack Christopher coming through, but just quality through and through, and size, athleticism. Very, very pleased. Extremely excited about what we're seeing with his first foals.
The Blue Gaina colt, he's big and strong, healthy, straightforward, smart, balanced. The My Sugar Bear foal, this filly is beautiful, a lot of bone, correct. I don't know what else you want. Can't say enough good things.
I don't think size is going to be an issue with the Jack Christophers. They seem to have more length of leg, which is going to lead to more size. I know it's very early days, but they're so easy to deal with as well.
Those 7/8 mile type horses as stallions, it gives you so many options just for breeding. Lots of winners, you know, there's so many races at those distances. And you can breed sprinters by those stallions and you can breed classic horses by those stallions. Great versatility and potential's there. And I think the best is yet to come for Munnings too. So I think we're only gonna see that sire line, that branch of the sire line only continue to improve.
This week's Fastest Horse of the Week is brought to you by Audible, one of those fast sires at Windstar Farm. Audible had two black type winners over the weekend. D. Regresso won the $100,000 Honey Rider Stakes at Gulfstream Park. And My Main Squeeze became his newest graded stakes winner when she scored an upset win in the $600,000 Grade 2 Eight Bells Stakes on Kentucky Derby weekend. Audible is the leading second crop sire. This is a nice superfecta, by the way, in earnings, black type winners, graded stakes winners, and wins. And Audible stands at Windstar for a fee of only $15,000. Now, fastest horse of the week, not surprisingly, came on Kentucky Derby weekend on Friday on Oaks Day in the Ali Sheba for older horses worth $1 million. It was First Mission, who recorded a buyer's speed figure of 106, bouncing back from a sort of a puzzling defeat in the Pegasus World Cup at Gulfstream Park. First Mission ran down yet another one of those seemingly overachieving Japanese horses, T.O. Saint-Denis, who spurted away to a huge lead on the backstretch. First Mission had the tactical speed to sit right behind him and ran him down to a nice buyer speed figure, career high buyer. For the fastest horse of the week, First Mission from the Brad Cox. The TD and Writers Room, as always, brought to you by The Green Group, a tax consulting and advisory firm specializing in this industry, in the thoroughbred industry, and designed to save you money right in the pocketbook.
And welcome in now the Green Group guest of the week. And who else could it possibly be other than the man of the hour, Kenny McPeak, after his historic weekend at Churchill Downs, winning both the Oaks and the Kentucky Derby. Kenny, welcome. And I realize you got a ways to go to the Preakness. And also, we're recording this on a Tuesday. So by the time it appears, maybe the story has changed a little bit. But give us your up-to-the-minute take on whether or not you're going to run this horse in the Preakness.
Well, the colt's doing fine. We're going to get him back to the track tomorrow. We've got a lot of storms coming through here today, but he's been in the feed tub the last couple of days. I'm not overly worried about that. But, you know, look, an old guy told me years ago, don't make a decision until you absolutely positively have to. And, you know, we just want to get him back out on the racetrack and make sure he's moving good and that he's, you know, his regular self, that his energy level's fine. And, you know, right now, I can't tell you one way or the other. Lance Gassaway and Sherilyn Gassaway and I will discuss it and ultimately we'll do the right thing. But I actually told Lance before the Kentucky Derby that because we skipped the Rebel, that I felt pretty good that if we needed to, we could run back in the Preakness. And so, you know, I think at this stage, you know, I'm optimistic. But right now, like I said, we don't have to make a call yet.
Is it fair to say, though, you're leaning towards running in the Preakness?
Well, who wouldn't want to?
Right.
I mean, who wouldn't want to? You know, you get these windows of opportunity and, you know, give him a chance to prove himself and, you know, maybe make amends on his loss at the Arkansas Derby. Who knows? But we wouldn't run him for those reasons other than if he was well and he was ready, then, and we feel like we can win it, we'll go. I mean, so, like I said, we got a few days and there's no rush.
Gotcha.
So, Kenny, I know you know this. The last trainer to pull off the Derby Oaks double was Plain Ben Jones 72 years ago. We're going to have to start calling you Plain Ken McPeak, if you don't mind.
What is the last? What writer's room? Did you have him on, Randy?
Jerry Bailey goes back that far, but not me. Okay. You know, unfortunately. So what have these last few days been like for you? I texted you and you said it hadn't sunk in yet. What's it like?
I've had a Belmont win and a Preakness win, and that's, you know, those are fantastic rides too, right? So I'm not going to say been there, done that, but I think the difference is probably, you know, the iPhone changes everything because so many of us, our world revolves around that. I had 2,000 text messages.
Wow. Whoa.
Oh,
really?
And that doesn't include people sending me Facebook messages. I didn't, you know, I don't even open Facebook, Twitter. Gosh, email, phone messages.
I've never even met 2,000 people.
Well, you know what? I think, and you know, the nice thing about it is that, yes, I have a lot of friends and a lot of people that I've known all my life, and I work really hard never to burn a bridge. You know, sure, I'm sure there are people that don't like me, but I've got a lot to do. So it's pretty cool. That's probably the most unique thing about it. I mean, I don't want to do anything different. Greg and I, our day is not any different. You know, we're still worrying about the same stuff. We've got to went through this huge list of horses that we got to make sure everybody's, you know, there's a big responsibility, and, you know, the work continues.
Kenny, take me through the moment on Saturday when you saw Brian cut the corner and turn for home, because there's some video of you and you're about the most stoic person I've ever seen watching their horse cross the wire. Take me through, what were you thinking? I can't even imagine.
I told my wife, Sherry, before the race, it wouldn't surprise me if he won by 4 or 5. I really did. I told her, it wouldn't surprise me if he won easy. And it looked like he was going to win easy when he cut the corner and he's 2 in front, 3 in front. I'm like, oh, wow, here he comes. And, you know, then I started getting worried when the other two started running down. But I was lucky because where I was located, I had a pretty good view of the finish. And having raced at Churchill a long time, I knew where the wire was because it sits actually in front of the finish pole, the mirror does. And then there was a monitor to my right that I was able to look over and eyeball, and they had this slow-mo. But I expected to win. I really did.
You did?
Yes. I expected
to win. What gave you – So what gave you that confidence? Because, I mean, in the Arkansas, look, he was awesome in the Southwest. And then I know you skipped the Rebel. And then in the Arkansas Derby, Muth and Just Steel were actually pulling away from him in the last eighth of a mile. So what gave you that much confidence going into the Kentucky Derby?
Well, in the Southwest, or I mean, the Arkansas Derby got mugged in that turn. You can't really see it because you don't have a head-on angle. But Brian nearly got knocked off the horse, and he felt like it cost him 4 or 5 lengths. And we had already whipped Just Steel in the Southwest on our best race. And so we wanted to win the Arkansas Derby, but it just didn't happen. We drew outside. In this case, we drew inside. And we already knew he'd love an inside trip. I bet more on him Saturday than I bet on a horse in my life, maybe. So, I mean, I'm not a gambler. I don't gamble. But to your question, confident. Okay, so maybe 3 weeks out, I was a little worried about how he was eating, and I changed his feed tub scene a little bit. First thing I put in there kind of failed, might have backfired. Then we found a good patch of clover out there, and we started feeding him or grazing him on clover every afternoon. He loved that, started eating a little bit better, and he's not a big horse, so he doesn't need to eat a ton. He's just a modest size, average size horse, but very efficient. And with her, she was like a lion in the feed tub all the time, and both of them on the racetrack were doing really well. And then, you know, we're all about details. Greg and I worry about details every day, and so I called Dr. Alday because I had a couple other ones I needed him to look at. I said, Steve, you know, come down. I want you to, you know, poke on some horses, check the points, see what you come up with. And Steve looked at 5 horses, including Torpedo and Mystic Dan. And he says, sorry, can't help you, Kenny. I can't do anything to help those horses. Those horses are doing perfect. I said, you can't find any sore spot anywhere? Nothing. Perfect. No, no ankles, no hocks, no back sore. No. Perfect. He said, Kenny, good luck. You can't use me. You don't need me. Okay. And, you know, and then I work them and they work 59 and 2 and did it easy. And I said, Brian, he really went faster than I wanted. And then they worked 59 and 2 again. Okay. Well, that's great, but okay. Check them. Nothing. Doing great. Okay. And for those out there that don't, you know, deal with what trainers deal with, you know, every day we're dealing with problems. The horse has got a foot issue. This one's not eating like you like. You know, this one's got a little back issue and has to warm up. I mean, it is not a straight line. I mean, Tahana Run was like Humpty Dumpty bringing him to the Kentucky Derby. I mean, he had a glute muscle sore. He had feet that were bothering him. He had a lung infection. It was one thing after another, and he still ran second. And here we brought these two, and it was literally like the seas parted.
So, Kenny, I've got a quick question. You had all these works leading up to the Derby, but you did something unorthodox that a lot of people wouldn't do. You actually worked your horse out of the gate on the Wednesday. Like a seasoned horse, you opted to break him out the gate and work him. And that, by the seams of it, seemed to work, right?
Well, yes and no. I wouldn't call it a work, but it was a reminder. And we knew that we were going to be standing in the gate for a minimum of 2 minutes. And so went Tuesday, we stood him in the gate for a full 2 minutes. Or maybe longer, right, Greg? I think longer. He stood in there and stood in there and stood in there. And what you don't want is one going in there and falling asleep. Now, he is a complete old soul, this horse. I mean, I could literally just walk him out in the graze and drop the shank and he'd stand there. He doesn't do anything wrong, ever. It's a waste of time to school him because he's so chill that it's like we're schooling ourselves because he's not worried about anything. It's very, very, he has a very, very unusual personality. Mm. He's an old soul. I don't know. It's for me, he's like 1,000 years old, this horse. Mm-hmm. He knows everything. So the gate, I told Brian, I said, okay, we're going to stand. Brian got on him Tuesday. So we're going to stand long 2 minutes. I said, but Wednesday, we're going to stand the long 2 minutes and we're going to pop him. Because if you get left flat-footed in the Kentucky Derby, you're done.
Yeah.
And because I knew that he'd only been out of the gate in the Arkansas Derby in 11 weeks, he'd only been out once. And so he needed a little refresher. And, of course, when they popped Saturday, he popped. And that gave Brian time to figure out where he wanted to be. Horse took him there without much effort.
Kenny, without you committing fully to the Preakness and we finding out that with the exception of Wayne Lucas, virtually nobody from the Derby is running back in the Preakness, the debate is going to come up again. Is the 2 weeks, 3 weeks spacing of the Triple Crown something that needs to change? For instance, if you had 4 full weeks between races, would you be more likely to run in the Preakness? Where do you stand on that?
I don't think the 2 weeks is a big deal. I mean, I've run horses back in 2 weeks plenty in my career. You know, I think the only thing that I would disagree with the 2 weeks would be is that if more Derby horses came back in 4 weeks or 5 weeks, oh, actually, if I could rearrange the Triple Crown and they made me commissioner or whatever it is, I would have first Saturday in May, first Saturday in June, first Saturday in July. But you've got to get three huge organizations to agree to that. But I think the uniqueness of the Triple Crown is the 2 weeks and 3 weeks. And it takes that's why it's such a test. And finally, I think that the fact that we've removed Lasix from the conversation makes it even a better test, because has the horse done it without Lasix yet?
Mm, no,
I don't think so.
No. No.
No.
Okay. So I think that's a good thing, because I think horses recover quicker without the Lasix. I think the Lasix was a detriment. I know there are guys that'll scream, oh, Lasix, I need Lasix. No, we don't need Lasix. Maybe there are certain horses that do. And yes, we do have bleeders, but they shouldn't be the ones that are running in the grade one, grade two, grade three levels. But the 2 weeks is easier without the Lasix, because the Lasix would dehydrate a horse. And then you would have to come back in 2 weeks and you'd have to recoup that fluid. And so that I'm not scared of the 2 weeks at all. I just want to make sure my horse is right.
So, Kenny, you've got a longstanding and well-deserved reputation of being probably the best trainer in the business at picking out horses for bargain prices. what constitutes a bargain price in today's economy, and being phenomenally successful with him, going all the way back to the $57,000 you paid for Curlin when you picked him out, who made $10 million. But there have been many, many, including Torpedo Anna. And I guess you fold Mystic Dan at Magdalena. But how much more satisfaction does that give you when you win races like this with horses that you've been that intimately involved with from the start?
Well, as a young trainer, I used to go, and I still do it. I like going to look at the good horses, and I can remember pretty much every horse I've ever seen. And I can recall their pedigrees. Usually I like looking at horses, look at their pedigree and how they're made and how they race and their angles. I believe horses are constellations. They're like stars in the sky. And if you look at the angles, you've got to envision the way they're made and what they'll do on the racetrack. And as a young trainer, I used to be so frustrated because I would get all these average horses and I was, oh man, I need a horse that's fast enough to compete with Wayne and Todd and, Nick and, all these guys that are great horses. Well, if you can't beat them with a budget, you got to beat them with your brain, right? I mean, this is a big chess match, this whole sport. For me, it's very cerebral in that you've got to plot and plan and know how to move across the board. You can't throw money at it. That's proven. Coolmore's got plenty of money. Sheikh Mohammed got plenty of money, but you have to outsmart it. And, money's definitely an advantage, but it's just a big chess match to me. I mean, you got to figure out a horse that's made, how they're made, whether they got the stamina, whether they have the speed, the mind. I'm unbelievably thrilled to have bought the mare, did the mating. I've got foals, the video of him as a foal, being foaled. I mean, crazy stuff. At my farm, I mean, what satisfaction is that? That's crazy, right? I feel like I created it. And, Lance and them, look, they supplied, but they ultra, ultra easy to deal with. And they've enjoyed it, and we're having fun with it. We're going to keep having fun with it. But, I'm disappointed that I couldn't do it for other clients, people that I really like working for, too.
That's a really cool story. Aside from Mystic Dan and Torpedo Anna, what are you most proud of? Like, which one of your purchases or which one of your horses are you most proud of? If you could pick out one thing and be like, that's a defining moment.
I don't know. It's too many of them. I bought Einstein in Brazil at a yearling sale, and he was completely overlooked down there. And I like doing that. I've been to Argentinian sales, Brazilian sales, and I bought some average horses in those sales too. But Einstein, that one, I literally walked into the sales grounds, looked at all the horses, said that one, bought him for $45,000 US and brought him back. And it couldn't sell him for 6 months. Nobody wanted him.
Wow.
And Curlin, I offered him to 6 different clients and nobody wanted him until they finally took him. And then, Swiss Skydiver was in book 4, back in the back, and she stood out. And you have to do all that really quick. You got to work through those sales. I mean, you're literally buzzing through the barns, and you're trying to figure, and you got to pluck and go. And I think that's the ultimate challenge. It's a lot harder than training them as finding them.
How long does it take you to look at a horse and decide whether you want him or not, or her?
Well, Jim Fitzgerald's nicknamed me Mr. 7 Seconds.
Yeah.
Because I do look at them really quick, and I go on my instinct. And because you don't have enough time to dwell. And so I go, and what I'll do is I'll make a first run through the barn area and use my instinct. And then I go back through and take my time. And then I call it and squeeze it like an accordion and all the air out of it to, like, okay, there's five in this session that I want to bid on. And then I start making phone calls, or I'll just go buy the horse and then worry about it later. And whenever I buy one cheap, my phone starts blowing up because people follow the results and go, oh, can I have that one? Can I have that one? Which is great, right?
Yeah.
Kenny, one of the great things about your career is you think outside the box. You've been one of the first people to go over to Epsom. You talked about buying horses in South America. With Mystic Dan, any chance that you would put him in the running for a foreign race like the Epsom Derby?
Well, this isn't the year to try that, but wouldn't it be cool if a Kentucky Derby won the Epsom Derby too? I mean, this is a horse that would be very capable of doing it. I wouldn't be scared of going at all. I mean, City of Troy just showed he had a little chink in his armor, but if he had won the Guineas the other day, and I pay attention to all that, then you would have been scared to go, but now it looks like it's pretty wide open. You know, Aiden would probably run 10, but, you know, and I love those guys. But yeah, I'd love to do that, but you know, this isn't the right horse in the right timing. But you could say that, let's say he won the Keeneland Stake and then maybe came back and won the American Turf. Oh, I'd already be on a plane. But, you know, that's – and Daddy's Little Darling, I think, would have run really well if she'd made the starting gate.
Yeah.
But I like those kind of challenges. I think they're fun.
What's next for Torpedo Anna?
I think the Acorn's a no-brainer. You know, we need to – I want to win another Alabama. She's very capable of doing that. You know, let's keep her in her division right now and go from there. I mean, I wouldn't be scared to run her in the Belmont at a mile and a quarter. I wouldn't want her to run her a mile and a half at Belmont itself, but Belmont at Saratoga, I mean, I'll contemplate it.
And so what, say you decide not to go to the Preakness with Mystic Dam, would you consider the Belmont for him?
Oh yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
Kenny, we haven't brought up Brian Hernandez yet, which seems a mistake on our part. Literally, if he didn't ride a perfect race, which he did, you might not have won, saving ground every single inch of the way. I mean, he never got any more than 3 inches offside the rail. You've been one of his biggest supporters. If you could just talk about what Brian meant to the team and about his ride on both horses.
Well, I've said repeatedly, he's a consummate professional. There's nothing complicated about Brian. Family man, no bad habits, comes in with a smile on his face, keeps an even keel, never had a crossword with him, never will, gives me feedback, loves to come breeze the horses, get on the horses. If I say, or Greg and I will be in here and we'll go, who you got coming 5:30? Oh, Brian here at 5:15, no problem. Never have to worry about scrambling. Where's Brian? No, he's here. And Frank Bernice, his agent's a fantastic guy. He came in here and said, we go through all the horses' conditions so he knows where we're going. You know, to touch on it, what is it that's in the water in Louisiana? Is it the food? Is it the soil? But they keep producing these guys that can ride. And the list is amazing in that, I mean, Eddie Delahousse is the first one, that, like my era at least. But you could go back, you know, Randy Romero, Kent DeSormo, Robbie Alvarado, Lannery, Shane Sellers, fantastic rider, simply didn't have a classic horse. Lannery hadn't had a classic horse. Burrell, you wouldn't want to leave him out, right? Mark Guidry was a great rider. If he ever left Chicago sooner, he what a fantastic jockey. I know I'm missing a bunch of them.
There's a ton of them. Larry Monson. I mean, there's so many of them over the years.
Amazing.
Yeah.
Amazing.
Maybe Jambalaya stunts their growth.
I don't know. And Brian's cut from that cloth. And I for years, all my career, I've used them a lot. And you don't have to tell them to cut the corner. You don't have to worry about them hitting a hole. I mean, they can just horseback.
Well, Kenny, I'm flattered that out of the 2,000 texts, you chose to return mine to get you to come on to this show. I know how busy you've been, and a lot of people rooting for you because you're one of the good guys in racing. Congratulations on an historic achievement, and hopefully we'll see you in the Preakness.
All right. Thanks for having me.
As the Green Group Guest of the Week, a guy that's come into a lot of money here recently, Ken McPeak, will receive a free one-hour tax consultation with Lynn Green et al. At the Green Group. For more information on how they can save you money on your taxes, go to www.greenco.com.
When it comes to the horse industry, tax laws are complicated and unique. That is why most people overpay on their taxes. Why not get a second opinion from the top-rated accounting and tax firm in the thoroughbred industry? With over 800 clients in the horse business alone, the Green Group has the expertise to save you taxes. There is a reason the most successful owners, breeders, trainers, vets, and horsemen use the Green Group as their tax advisors. We save you taxes. Over the past 40 years, the Green Group founder, Len Green, has owned and bred some of the best racehorses in the history of the sport. His DJ stable competes at the highest level and has received the game's most prestigious honors. Len Green's in-depth, hands-on industry knowledge, combined with current-edge tax-saving strategies, produces positive tax-saving results for clients. Take advantage of this special offer. The Green Group will give you a complimentary and confidential review of your tax return. Contact us at 732-634-5100 or visit our website at www.greenco.com.
On this week's edition of First Things First, I caught up with Phil D'Amato, who had literally just got back to Santa Anita. Phil, you got back quick from Churchill. When did you get back?
Yeah, about 12:30. I was able to hop on an owner's private plane, which always helps, and just catch an Uber right off the plane.
Awesome. Tell me a little bit about your experience at Stronghold, how he came out, and what the plans are now.
Yeah, I'm very happy. He came out of the race 100% perfect. That's it. Considering that kind of race, it's a really good thing. Well, I talked to the owners. We're probably just going to give him a little freshening in-house and then point for some nice of these, all these nice three-year-old stakes throughout the country.
Do you have any in mind?
I made a long list of them, and we're just going to kind of play it by ear, see how, he trains. But the good thing is there's a lot of them and throughout the country, and I'm sure we'll find a couple good spots.
Was it fun?
Oh, it was awesome. To experience that with my family, it was just kind of an electric feeling, walking over with the horse with them. It was cool. It's definitely, any trainer gets that itch, they'll definitely want to come back every year and do it again.
All right, well, you were gone. You won a good race here at Santa Anita with Gold Phoenix taking down the Charlie Whittingham. A win and you're in for the Grade 1, Group 1 Coral Eclipse in England. Tell us about Gold Phoenix, and do you need a rider for England? Because I am available.
Yeah, he ran a sensational race. He didn't really show up the race prior. Kyle Frey had ridden him before for me and has praised him a lot. So, he knows him like the back of his hand. So I just thought, let's change things up a little bit, put Kyle back on him. And he just gave him a nice, more aggressive ride, put him in the race. And, he battled through the stretch and got the job done.
Are we going to Old Blighty?
We'll talk to the owners. I just think with this kind of horse pointing for the Breeders' Cup, going over there and coming back, you might, take too much out of them to have that chance to do that. And we want to focus on the Del Mar races where he really loves Del Mar. That's where, he's won his winning your ends, and, we're going to try to do it again.
Maybe next time.
Maybe next time.
Many thanks there to Phil. Looks like I won't be going to Sandown anytime soon, but, perhaps next year he'll have a shot. All right, let's talk about Santa Anita. This weekend, we will resume racing on Friday, and there is a massive Pick 6 carryover for their 8-race card on Friday. We'll start with race number 3, a carryover of over $100,000. Expected to exceed $500,000. And for all you fathers out there and husbands, don't forget, it is Mother's Day on Sunday. You can bring your wife or your mother or your sister, or just bring the whole family. Bring them out to Santa Anita for a Mother's Day brunch on Sunday. You can go to santaanita.com for more details on that.
That sounds great. A brunch on Mother's Day at Santa Anita. I would definitely take that in if I was living in the 626 area code. Well, guys, of course, now we've got to move on to the Preakness. And at this point, we don't know everything. You just heard what Ken McPeak had to say. Sounds to me like he's going to go in the Preakness, though he hasn't committed fully to it. Wayne Lucas, who never misses a big dance when he can, he's going to run two horses, including the horse that he ran in the Derby and Seize the Gray, who won the Pat Day Mile. But Randy, I mean, let's get on our soapbox again for the 100th time and talk about again. Okay, and also Baffert will bring in his horses. So that just because of that, it's going to be a better Preakness than it would have been under ordinary circumstances without the Baffert story. But this isn't working. And like I said, we've talked about it 1,000 times. This just isn't working. And, you know, the Preakness is in danger of having a race some year where the Kentucky Derby winner doesn't run and literally no one from the Kentucky Derby comes back in the Preakness. But, you know, the three tracks can't get together and fix this. And here we go. Another Preakness where it's going to be about as much about who's there as who's not there.
Maybe I'm just naive, Bill. I think it's ultimately going to be fixed. And I think it's probably going to be fixed relatively soon, probably after after the Belmont at Saratoga two-year run ends and the Belmont Stakes goes back to the newly rebuilt Belmont Park. That's what I think will happen. Maybe this is a Pollyanna opinion, but I think the New York Racing Association, despite the fact that the Belmont has been the beneficiary of this, can see the writing on the wall and can understand that the Triple Crown as a unit is being compromised by what's going on with the 2 weeks and 3 week gap between the races. Look, if Mystic Dan, right now it looks like Mystic Dan and Just Steel will be the only two horses from the Kentucky Derby to run in the Preakness. If Wayne Lucas wasn't the trainer of Just Steel, and if Kenny McPeak changes his mind about the Preakness, you would have zero, just like he predicted might happen someday. So it definitely has to be changed. I don't care what some of the, you know, tradition obsessed people think. You got to make improvements. You don't change just for the sake of changing. And this definitely is an improvement that would be overdue, but hopefully we get the Derby winner back in the Preakness this year.
Let's hope. But I'm all for the first Saturday in May, first Saturday in June, first Saturday in July. It just seems logical. And as far as this year's entrance for the Preakness, hey, we never brought this up, but how do you think Bob was feeling on Saturday when he saw Mystic Dan win, knowing that Muth just beat him by two lengths in the Arkansas Derby?
Well, yeah. And then there's this, okay. I've said this before and I'll say it again. And Churchill, you know, Bill Carstangen didn't tell me this. I firmly believe that a primary reason why Churchill extended the ban from 2 to 3 years is that they were looking for anything to hang their hat on to try to keep Baffert out of this specific Kentucky Derby because they thought that his presence would overshadow the 150th anniversary. And they didn't want to take a chance on the 150th anniversary being a situation, well, where Carstangen is in the winner's circle or whoever presenting the trophy to Bob Baffert, or in this case, it might have been Amer Zidane and Bob Baffert. And I think now that this Kentucky Derby is over and they look back on it, I think they are happy with their decision since Muth soundly defeated Mystic Dan in the Arkansas Derby. And you can certainly make the case that Muth might have won the Kentucky Derby if he'd been allowed to run. This is my opinion.
I think they dodged a little bit of a bullet when Nisos got hurt, because if he had, as good as Muth is, if Nisos had won the Santa Anita Derby by open lengths, he would have been the sensation coming into the race, and then it would have been a big story. So, Zoe, let's get back to Muth. All things being equal, like Randy said, he beat Mystic Dan in the Arkansas Derby. He's been freshened up. Also, he's got his stablemate Imagination. How dangerous are the Baffert horses in the Preakness? I got to think very dangerous.
Super, super dangerous. We're going to show you the work in just a moment. But yeah, super, super dangerous, the pair of them. And, you know, he's got two in the race. And if Mystic Dan goes, there's only one of Mystic Dan. And I mean, Bob can team up. They can like gangbusters. But yeah, super dangerous. I'm not sure I'd want to be going there off 2 weeks rest and facing those two monsters.
No, Muth will be the favorite.
Yeah, so Randy, really? Okay.
Oh yeah. He'll be the favorite in the Preakness over Mystic Dan. I don't think there's any doubt about it. My opinion.
Yeah.
And there's one other horse to mention too. I mean, Baffert will bring Muth and Imagination. Chad Brown has a horse by the name of Tuscan Gold, who ran an exceptional race in the Louisiana Derby to finish third. Didn't have enough points to run in the Kentucky Derby, I think. Maybe with some of the scratches, he might have been able to sneak in. But anyway, this is the thing we've seen so often in the last few years. This is the Chad Brown Preakness horse that skipped the Kentucky Derby to wait for the Preakness. And he's got a great chance to win it. The TD and Riders Room is brought to you, as always, by the Pennsylvania Horse Breeders Association, the PHBA. The Pennsylvania bred, Pennsylvania sired, don't look back at all, became Peace and Justice's newest stakes winner as a stallion in Sunday's $150,000 license fee stakes at Aqueduct. Congratulations to the breeder, A1A Racing. Peace and Justice stands at Blackstone Farm in Pine Grove, Pennsylvania. For more information on breeding and racing, your very own PA Bred, visit www.pabred.com and click on the Stallion and Boarding Farm Directory link at the top of the homepage. Any questions after that? Here's the phone number, 610-444-1050.
The PA Horse Breeders Association has a remarkable story to tell. North America's most lucrative awards program also produces Grade 1 winners year after year. Of all the great PA breeds, none is more well-known, more iconic than Smarty Jones. We salute Smarty on the 20th anniversary of his wins in the first two jewels of the 2004 Triple Crown, at the time becoming only the third ever undefeated Preakness champ.
With some of the fullest fields in the country and quality racing year-round, there's never been a better time to reap the rewards of breeding and racing in Kentucky. Purse money in Kentucky is at an all-time high, as is average purse per race, outpacing California, Florida, and New York. Kentucky breds. Breed them. Raise them. Race them. We all win.
Imagine this. This is a shocker. Kentucky Oaks and Kentucky Derby winners bred in the state of Kentucky. Kentucky bred Torpedo Anna, obviously in the Kentucky Oaks. The breeder, congratulations, Judy Hicks. You saw her briefly in the winner's circle after the race. She's also a co-owner, and she earned a $50,000 award for a KBIF registered Oaks winner. And Mystic Dan's win in the Kentucky Derby gave Kentucky breds 116 victories in the 150-year history of the Run for the Roses.
Well, when we talked with Kenny McPeak, we talked mainly about him winning the Kentucky Derby, but didn't want to give a short sell the feed in the Kentucky Oaks as well with Torpedo Anna, stablemate of Mystic Dan. And, you know, huge weekend for Brian Hernandez, huge weekend for Kenny McPeak. That was a tough field, I thought. And, you know, to me, it looked like, I'm not surprised that she won. I'm surprised that she won as easily as she did. I thought that was the race that was going to have three noses on the wire rather than the Kentucky Derby. So, Randy, what was your review of the Oaks?
Oh, I thought Torpedo Anna ran an exceptional race. Look, to me, she was the most visually impressive in her most recent race in the Fantasy Stakes of any of the Oaks fillies. And again, kudos not just to Kenny McPeak, but to Brian Hernandez for a very opportunistic ride. Torpedo Anna drew, you know, sort of an inside post position, and she drew post five or post four, actually. number five on the saddle tail. But they looked at the McPeak and Hernandez looked at the competition and saw that the speed, the competing speed, was to the outside of Torpedo Anna, and they thought, you know, if she breaks well, you know, why not use her ability and her sharpness to their advantage? And it just worked out that, to the surprise of everyone, Torpedo Anna, for the first time in her career, I believe, was actually on the pace. And it wasn't a slow pace. They went a half in 46.3. But, you know, we've seen this as handicappers and as bettors all the time, guys. You know, when you have the best horse in a race, sometimes it's better. Don't get cute. You know, don't mess around and don't be trying to rate when you don't have to. And in this case, speed, rail, rebroke at the top of the lane and beat a very sharp filly herself in just FYI.
Yeah, she was quick. I think she may have been aided a little bit by the sloppy racetrack that day, because speed was, I mean, it was fairly fair, but speed's always dangerous on a sloppy racetrack, especially for those horses trying to catch up after they've been splattered with mud. So yeah, she won convincingly and she earned it. Those are very, very honest fractions she went for. As far as just FYI was concerned, I thought she was going to nab her at the head of the lane. I really did. She had no excuse whatsoever. And you know what? For future reference, if I'm riding just FYI, because I'm still her biggest fan, I think she's just got no gears. She has a high cruising speed. I'm going to put her on the lead next time. Put her on the lead and make them come and catch me, because she does not have that kick. She was in a perfect position to go on by Torpedo Anna, who just kept going. Yeah, that's what I would do. Stick her on the lead next time, Mr. Mott.
That's some interesting advice. All right, guys, I'm going to go out on a limb a little bit here. And all we've been talking about, the Kentucky Derby, the Kentucky Oaks, I think the best horse in racing, any age, any sex, etc., is Idiomatic. And she came back like a tiger, winning the La Troyenne. And she, and to do so, she had to beat the fellow champion, Pretty Mischievous. And it was a tremendous performance. Brad Cox isn't somebody like a McPeak who thinks outside the box too much. So I doubt very much he would run her against males at any point. But boy, I almost voted for Horse of the Year last year. I didn't. I voted for Cody's Wish, which was the right thing to do. But what a way to kick off her year, Zoe.
Yeah. She looked great. I mean, I'd like to put her and Sierra Leone together and just see who's bigger. Because they both kind of look the same, because she's got this big galloping stride just like him. I could just imagine them going head and head down to the wire. But she won. She earned it on a sloppy racetrack. She never, to me, looks like she's just struggling one pace. She just gallops along, but she gallops everyone into submission. And she won pretty handily on the end. I thought the runner-up, I can't remember her name, she got a perfect trip on the rail coming up, and she just ran out of gears, basically.
Yeah, look, it's her sixth win in a row, her ninth win in her last 10 starts. Free Like a Girl, I think, was that runner-up that came up the inside. Yeah, the Louisiana bred. But look, Idiomatic showed once again that she loves a fight. I mean, and she had a fight on her hands, and it looked at one point at the quarter pole. If you didn't know it was Idiomatic, you might think, but you know, she dug in, and then as always, and then at the end, she was drawing away. And I'm really looking forward to what the rest of the year holds for Idiomatic. And kudos to Judmont for keeping her in training. I mean, what else does she really have to prove? She won the Breeders' Cup Distaff. She's made $2.5 million. She's got a fantastic pedigree. And of course, Judmont, this is a Judmont bred, and they're all about their breeding industry, but they decided to keep her going for another year. And that's good for horse racing for sure.
We touched on it a little bit earlier, but the TDN Writers' Room is brought to you by XBTV, and this is a work you need to watch if you're planning on betting on the Preakness. All right, so let's take a look at Muth and Imagination this past Saturday. Trainer Bob Baffert confirmed that the Grade 1 Arkansas Derby winner Muth and stablemate Imagination, who won the Grade 2 San Felipe, before finishing a narrow second behind Stronghold in the Santa Anita Derby. Last out are both expected for the Preakness. They breezed in company Saturday in 1:11.2. Now you can see Muth down on the inside of Imagination, and these two are absolutely cruising. Actually, I would say, watching this work, I might give the edge to Imagination as they cross the wire right there. 11.2. They're supposed to ship from Southern California to Baltimore on May the 14th. Guys, if you watch that work, you got to think that Bob Squarley has the two main contenders in the Preakness.
All the thrills. Fraction of the bills. Experience the power of the partnership. Change your life, make new friends, and compete at the highest level of thoroughbred racing. West Point Thoroughbreds, the gold standard in racing partnerships. Visit westpointtb.com.
Meanwhile, the TD and Riders Room is also brought to you by West Point Thoroughbreds, which racked up three stakes winners last week. Three different trainers, Cherie DeVoe, Greg Foley, and Christophe Clement, but all three ridden by Irad Ortiz. First of all, Vava in the Derby City Distaff. I think she's got like 48 owners. She came through on the big stage against her rival there to win in the Derby City Distaff. And then also at Churchill, Obesos. Greg Foley's done a great job with Obesos. Won the St. Matthews Overnight Stakes. He's now made more than $760,000. And then at Aqueduct in the License Fee Stakes, it was Don't Look Back at All on Sunday, leading home a 1-2 finish for the Clement Barn. Gal in a Rush finished second there in the License Fee. Now this weekend, looking forward, Cortez and Ohana Honor will square off for West Point in the Man O' War, the Grade 2 $400,000 race on the grass at Aqueduct. And of course, that would vault those owners into the world of instant camaraderie. For more, visit westpointtb.com.
Well, that's a wrap on this week's show. I hope we entertained you and informed you a little bit about what's coming up in the Preakness. I want to thank my partners, Zoe Cabman and Randy Moss, and our producers, Katie. Oh, where's Randy going? Uh-oh.
He wanted to show a little bit of leg. I see you in those shorts, Randy.
Oh, yeah.
Easy now.
Hi, Lucy. It's good to have you back.
He missed me very much. I was gone for a long time.
All right, so we want to thank once again Zoe, Randy, and Lucy, who was a big part of this team, no doubt, as well as our producers, Leah LaRocca, Anthony LaRocca, and Katie Petruniak. Thanks so much, everybody, for tuning us in. Have a great next weekend, and pretty soon it'll be Preakness time. Woo! Stay with us next week. We'll be back.